Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome you to Missing Pages of History. This is a program that is dedicated to development to underserved communities. We'd like to invite you to come and join us on a bi-weekly basis as we continue down the road of filling our missing pages of history. Today, what we'd like to do is we would like to have some announcements, and once we are done our announcement, the agenda will follow. We will have hot topics, and a core subject matter for today for Missing Pages of History will be a revision of the history of Black Wall Street. And as always, we have our contributor, our analyst, and our historian, Emmanuel, who will be giving his perspectives on these very important issues and topics. And later on, we invite you to join in with us by calling in at 818-337-0016. 818-337-0016. Or you go on our chat line back on Blog Talk Radio, and we will entertain any kind of questions or comments that you may have. So again, welcome you to Missing Pages of History. As you know, we'd like to inform you that on the 21st of May, we have our secondly quarterly reference room, which will take place on UCLM on the 21st. If you have not received your ticket yet, please do so by contacting one of its members, or you can contact us on our website. At the same time, we have an ongoing screen cap and t-shirt drive for the spring and the summer coming. If you haven't gotten your cap and t-shirt, place your order in. Please do so also by contacting our members or going to our website. We are also currently hosting a membership drive for those individuals who would like to join us and help us build our communities. Please do so by going to our website, which is at www.mphinc.org. That's www.mphinc.org. As well as if you need to communicate with us directly, you also can reach us by email, and that is at missingpagesofhistory1@.com. So again, we welcome your participation, we welcome your support. And at this point in time, what we want to do here, we want to start off with a hot topic section. Today, the first hot topic, which recently took place, and the whole world in mourning the death of Prince. Emmanuel, we first would like to welcome you first and foremost to Missing Pages of History.
Thank you.
Emmanuel, as you know, we lost a great artist, a great cultural figure, better known as Prince. What do you make of his transition, his recent transition?
Well, Prince's death raises numerous health questions. He was an epileptic patient. He was struggling with childhood epilepsy. So the autopsy, again, as the results have not been submitted yet to any of the news medias or the media. But again, we lost a great artist, one of the best of all time. He could play 27 instruments, all self-taught. Numerous people has sending text messages from Twitter, Instagram. But we don't know. We just don't know at the moment. The autopsy has been performed. And that's again, the results will be out in weeks or maybe even months. It's very heartbreaking. And to me, I grew up with him basically. the doves that are crying. When doves cry, that was quite a song. He was a super genius to me. A super genius. Prolific and also visionary. And internationally, he was known around the world. But he brought together film and music, especially with Purple Rain. We left into the future with this young man. We have lost the entire media, and the movie industry has lost a great, great entertainer.
Okay, I'm quite sure at some point in time when people write the history, it will most definitely be in low history pages. Let's move forward in terms of, you know, recently there have been, particularly in the state of North Carolina and throughout the country, there have been some discussion on the LGBT movement, and particularly in relationship to this HR2 bill. Can you give our listening audience a backdrop of this, what that bill is about, and what's really happening with that particular issue?
Well, LGBT, this basically states that requires transgender people to use public bathrooms conforming to the sex on their birth certificates and restricts protecting the LGBT people. Okay. Well, what is going on here that people don't understand exactly, there are some common sense restroom norms. That's what I'm going to call them. There are some common sense, they're basic, common sense restroom norms. And we can take something too far sometimes. You know, we got to protect our women and girls from men because you don't know their behavior sometimes. Using the false pretense of being transgender to enter women's restrooms and locker rooms. This can bring on a whole different agenda, whole different criminal agenda to this law. So we better look at this very carefully, very, very carefully. I'm totally against it. I'm not against people using the bathroom, but again, to the public bathroom, but again, conforming to the sex on the birth certificate. Already, signs are being posted. We don't care what sex you are. This is already. North Carolina has lost almost $100 million in business. They talk about their all-star game basketball. Not, you know, that's been a dilemma whether to come here or not. Businesses were coming here in North Carolina. They're not coming now. So, again, when we go into stadiums, the big events, this is really going to bring in some havoc. So, again, people dressing up to be women, to go into the women's bathroom. There's so many different particulars that are very negative with this. Excuse me there. But again, I'm totally against it. And again, to me, people are welcome, you know, to the state of North Carolina. Everybody will be treated well. Extraordinary hospitality, but still, It's about respectfully disagreeing with a political review and the agenda to mandate change to basic common sense restroom norms.
Okay, okay. You are listening to Missing Pages History. We are just discussing some current events, hot topics, as related to Prince transition and this LGBT HR2 bill and its impact on our society. Later on, you'll be having a chance to be given an opportunity to give your perspective on the particular issues and more. But right now, we'd like to move to our little mini facts, our little black mini facts. Candy Davis will talk a little bit about the nature of the history of dealing with black businesses. Amelia, what are your mini facts today as related to black businesses?
Well, basically, the founding fathers believed slavery was a necessary economic evil. I'm going to repeat that. The founding fathers, so we know who they are, basically, believed slavery was a necessary economic evil. We know slavery was evil. It was a very peculiar institution. But moving to many facts, in the 1920s, black America had 5 times more businesses per 100,000 blacks than they have today. I'm going to repeat that. It's very important that we digest this. In the 1920s, black America had 5 times more businesses per 100,000 blacks than they have today. Also, according to the 2000 census, approximately 50%, basically 55%, of black businesses had revenue of less than $10,000 per year. This is year 2000, 16 years ago. The average business, 55% was black businesses, only had $10,000 per year. I'm going to move you up to 2004. In the year 2004, black America exported nearly 90% of its collective $700 billion disposable income out of our own pockets into non-black businesses. We recycled in 2004 of the $700 billion black businesses recycled $50 billion. Interesting.
Yeah. When you say disposable income, you mean? What is disposable income? What do you mean by disposable income?
Well, disposable income is the money that we spend basically doing. I'll put it this way: when you shopping, purchasing, buying, this is disposable income. We're not talking about paying utility bills. We're talking about paying mortgage and all. We're talking about disposable income. We were 1.1 trillion when you add mortgages and other things involved, utilities, all that stuff involved. We're talking about spending money, going to restaurants, taking vacations, eating out, this type of thing, buying clothing, putting it into the mainstream of the economy. $700 billion. So getting your hair done, haircuts, this type of thing. This is disposable income, you know, mainly purchasing, buying stuff. Disposable income means you have money that you just basically dispose of. And we recycle $50 billion of the $700 billion. It went to non-black businesses. But they said when they did integration, do not integrate the money. And I get into Black Wall Street, you'll learn some things there. Now I'm going to do an interesting fact on one more thing. This is amazing to me. in 1920s, within the 1920s, when the Black Wall Street was basically came to fruition, Tulsa, Oklahoma, one of the Black Wall Street businesses of the two, was so racist and segregated, it was the only city in America, the only city in America that could boast of segregated telephone booths. Can you imagine that? And we talking about integrating bathrooms with female and male. This is amazing. Telephone booths segregated in the 1920s in Tulsa, Oklahoma, only city in America. Thank you. That's by many facts.
Okay, let's move on. Black Men in Facts to the core subject for today's program, which is MPH Revisit Facts and Information on the History of Black Wall Street. Emmanuel, what have you found out about how history has been presented when we talk about the whole history of Black Wall Street?
Well, Black Wall Street was in the 1920s. I was based on my business. As I was talking about when I was in the 1920s, we had quite a few, much time, we, that was our biggest business book having booming that particular time. In the 1920s, the 20th century, you might say, Black America had thriving business communities across America. Two of the largest and most successful Black business districts called Black Wall Street. Where were they located? One was in Durham, North Carolina, and in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Following the Civil War, Black sense of unity, independence, and segregation forced them to build communities. Support, some we do not do now. And create their own employment opportunities. This is what we did in the 1920s, why we had five times more business than you have now for 100,000 people. This is what everybody did, the Greeks, the Polish, the Germans, the Italians, the Chinese, everybody come to America, do this. And what happened was, Durham had the first Black Wall Street, which was the role model for Tulsa, Oklahoma. Durham had over 150 thriving businesses, including a number of Black banks, national insurance companies, which boasted more than $200 million. That's quite a bit of money back in 19th century. And combined assets. Let's talk about assets. And employed a large number of Black citizens. But the Great Depression of the 1930s caused white business failures all across America. White businesses failed. But Black owned, some have probably heard of this bank called Mechanics and Farmers Bank, in Durham. They boasted that it did not lose one Black business during the Great Depression.
Well, Mr. Joyner, if the Great Depression didn't destroy the Black businesses in Durham, then what did?
Durham was killed off by social integration. That's how it got killed off by social integration. Let's go to the second largest Black Wall Street. What killed it off? Well, it died a different and more violent death. Tulsa, Oklahoma did. Wasn't quite like Durham. I explained what social integration is. I go along with explaining what social integration is. Integrating the money, basically. Want you to have in the businesses. The second largest Black Wall Street dialects that are different and more violent there. In the early 1900s, Durham Wall Street inspired black entrepreneurs in Tulsa to build a similar business district. By 1900, they had constructed numerous factories, hotels, transportation companies, theaters, restaurants, grocery stores, clothing stores, and retail stores, etc. Fine, they call them subdivisions now. Fine residential housing, professional offices for who? For black doctors, lawyers, accountants. They line the streets of the black community. Blacks in Tulsa, Oklahoma, were actively practicing group economics. This is what other ethnic groups do. They do group economics. We do integrated economics, socially. Just like whites and ethnic immigrants, this is what Tulsa did in Oklahoma. But what happened? Tulsa's white citizens subordinated, exploited, and segregated Tulsa's black citizens were envious of the prosperity. This is what we have to look at. Envy. And I want you to have envy. Blacks enjoyed practicing group economics, doing business with their own people and making them money, turn 8 to 12 times within their own community. Now our money turns less than one time in our own community. I got to repeat that, but this has to really stick to your cranium. This is what we need to do. Group economics. Doing business with their own people and making their money bounce 8 to 12 times within their own community before it leaves the community. It leaves the community now less than one time. It's gone. So, white envy was subdued by racial hate. They don't have your money. The money's not being integrated. They don't like this. They don't like it now. So what we got to do? We got to find a way to take these businesses away. How are we going to destroy them? Well, what they did was an incident. A 19-year-old black male accidentally stumbled on a jerky elevator and brushed against a white woman proved to be an itinerary event that gave whites an excuse to riot and destroy black lives, property, and businesses. You have a faded postcard in the Library of Congress showing you the Tulsa burning and how it all happened, what I just told you. What happened after this 19-year-old black male brushed up against this white woman in the elevator after he tripped over Jerky. So for nearly a week, white mobs and thugs robbed and ransacked more than 1,400 black homes, schools. They burned the churches and businesses. Local white police watched the rampage. White mobs attacked defenseless blacks. White pilots, this was the first bombing in the United States. White pilots from a nearby Air Force base dropped turpentine bombs on black homes, businesses, churches. The riots ending. Whites had lynched and shot nearly 600 Tulsa's Black Wall Street had been totally destroyed. During the following year, the surviving blacks lived in tents donated by the American Red Cross, while whites bought the burned out and abandoned property at bargain prices, basically pennies. Whether by the hands of white riders in Tulsa, Oklahoma, also in Durham, North Carolina, black America had yet to recover from the economic losses of slavery, the new old Jim Crow and the new Jim Crow, segregation, and the two black Wall Streets.
Yeah, listen to what it is you have. That's a basic history version. This history of Black Wall Street, what we'd like to do right now is to open up our phone line for any questions or comments based on what I've been sharing with you today as relates to our major core story, the history of Black Wall Street, as well as any comments you may have concerning some of the information you heard under the topic of hot topics by many factors. We, as always, what we want to do and try to do is to continue to travel down the road of filling in many of our missing pages. So right now, if you have any views or comments, please call 818-337-0016 and hit 1, and we will acknowledge your last four numbers. And I see we have a listening audience right now who wants to get in on the subject today. And we would like to welcome that caller. Caller, welcome to Missing Pages of History. Caller 3330. Your question or comments?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, my comment is in reference to how Prince ties into the methodology behind Black Wall Street. What a lot of people don't know is that even though Prince may not have went on record about how he used this money, he was responsible for donating to a lot of progressive black causes. And one recently that was talked about was there was a CNN interview with Van Jones, who has launched a movement to help black students get the education that's needed to get into the IT world and pursue technology careers. And one thing that Prince did was to donate a lot of money to his Let's Code initiative to help black youth to get the necessary technology skills to compete in today's society. So just a testament to the humanitarian that he was, but due to his strict Jehovah's Witness beliefs, he didn't necessarily go public with those kind of doubts. So that's just one of the examples.
Okay. Emmanuel, before we have you respond to his comments, we would like to alert our listening audience who are listening on this program back online that to hear the entire of this program, you might want to dial in now by phone at 818-337-0016. And also, you always get the entirety of all of our program by going to our website at www.mphinc.org. Emmanuel, any response to any comments that the young man just stated concerning his from Wall Street?
No, I'm familiar with that and a lot of more things he did. He wrote a song about Baltimore. It's going to be released about what happened in Baltimore. And he was quite a humanitarian. He was quite a guy. I can safely say a lot of stuff he did on the humanitarian fight that a lot of people don't know, but he made sure that kids that had unique talent, didn't have talent, he gave them talent. And like I say, Paisley Park was something different and Prince was something different. Quite a human being and a humanitarian.
Again, if you have any comments or questions, please hit 1. So we can acknowledge your last one. Please hit 1. This is Missing Pages of History. We have another caller. Okay, let's take this call. Okay, caller, we welcome to Missing Pages of History. Caller 9289. Caller 9289. 9289. Welcome.
Good evening. I just wanted to make a statement. I enjoyed hearing the information and the history of Black Wall Street. by Mr. Joyner, but also I'd like to also say, didn't they also call the Black Wall Street the Little Africa?
No, I never heard that. I never heard of that response to it. No, I never heard.
Okay.
Can you maybe share with the audience where you saw something that may have used that term to also label Black Wall Street? What source you may have gone to?
Basically, the information came off the internet when I was just researching the Black Wall Street, and this is actually in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where they, this was just one of the names that they referred to them as Little Africa. That's where I got the information. But I'll do some more research on it. But
okay, we thank you, Carl. If you can send us that information, we'll greatly appreciate it. You know, there's a lot of information out there that need to be discovered, and we thank you for your contribution. Emmanuel, one of the things I think you raised tonight about this concept of Black Wall Street, you said more than one. Normally we say one Black Wall Street with Tulsa. You said Tulsa actually stuck one.
Durham, North Carolina was the first Wall Street, the first Black Wall Street.
And that's something we never heard. I never heard that perspective about Durham being the first Wall Street.
Yeah, Durham was the first Wall Street, yeah. Yeah, Durham, okay. Tulsa did a copy of Durham, basically.
Okay,
and Tulsa was thriving with 150 more businesses. They did it right. And that's what, again, the envious of whites, because now you're taking the money from them. They don't like black competition because you got, today you have $1.5 trillion, not all disposable. That's the kind of GNP we got. If we were a nation, we'll be the ninth largest nation in the world, our GNP would be. So if you look at that, how much money that we dispose of, but again, we bring the money to them, you know what I'm talking about. We take our money from them, and that we have to understand that every business that we started, whether all businesses, we built automobiles, they basically got rid of us. I'll get into that later on. All businesses that we built, that we started, also, you know, automobiles, I'm going to get into that. Things that we used to do that people don't even know about. And we also invented the lottery. I'm going to talk about the lottery. We invented that. The lottery was invented in 1885 in Chicago. So the first black, I think his name was Samuel Young, a black man, invented the lottery. Called playing the numbers. And it's a thriving business in the black community, playing the numbers. But we'll get into that later on. And the lottery system today, black man invented that. See, that's, people don't even know this. Samuel Young was his name. 1885, I think it was. And the lottery business is called playing the numbers. But these are kind of things that missing pages of history going to bring to people. That again, stolen from us, basically. Stolen from us. And thriving because, again, they introduced it. But it wasn't invented by them. But they take everything you get that's possible. They get envious because they can't control the money. They got to control the money. They got to control, they say, 90% of the money that we make. Make sure we bring it to them because we are the profit margin of America. If we don't spend no money, the money that we make, they're basically broke.
Mm-hmm. You know, man, can you speak a little bit? You talk about how money does not circulate back into our various communities. What we need to do to overcome that? Because part of it is the attitude that we have among ourselves. We are jealous and don't like to support ourselves. So how do you address that?
I did in what I talked about Wall Street, what happened, and that was supported by the community. So the main thing in employment, is done a certain way. we don't practice it anymore because we have a social integrated, where our economics has been socially integrated now. So we basically copy. We have a diffuse culture. I mean, our culture is borrowed. We don't have one, basically. We borrow from someone else what they do. But again, they make sure, the New Orleans letter, make sure that they don't trust nobody but us. So make sure you put everything out there negative that you can. So again, we put out 90% negative news on black people so we don't trust each other. This is what they're supposed to do, show the negativism 90% of the time. So that's the brainwashing that we have to undo. We got to undo the brainwashing, and that's going to be hard to do. I'm going to try to do a subject on brainwashing, how we've been brainwashed over the years, decades.
Well, Emmanuel, one of the things about Missing Page of History, you know, in terms of the upcoming activities, we have an upcoming record drawing which takes place on the 21st of May, as well as there's an ongoing screen drive, summer drive, of purchasing an MPH cap and T-shirt. These are just some ways how the audience can support Missing Pages of History, as well as to actually join us. We are now open to take in new members. For those who would like to participate more concretely with MPH, what are some of the expectations or some of the other activities in the future that you see Missing Pages of History can be involved in terms of trying to improve our community?
Was that a question to me?
Yes, yes.
Give me the question again, please.
Could you share with those who might want to join or become a member of MPH what may be some of the future activities that MPH is looking forward to engaging in that will help to serve our communities?
Well, number one is, you know, of course, fundraising. It takes money to work any organization. Number two, volunteer work. We volunteer to a lot of organizations, participate in a lot of organizations, and of course the youth. We participate giving money to the Boys and Girls Club. We also do a basketball thing that we donate to and help make sure. We do donations of clothing. We tutor things that we do. Some of the things that we need the people who volunteer and will join us need to do. And again, we like to share with other organizations that are nonprofit. What are they doing? We exchange ideas, exchange things to expand some of these ideas. But the main thing we need to do is job opportunities. 31% of African Americans are basically unemployed, our youth, and they're basically locking them up. So we need to undo this. We got to unchain our young men. We need employment opportunities. But like I say again, it's a come to us for everything. Well, we don't have businesses. We need more businesses. A lot of them. That's what Black Wall Street did. But they don't want you to have that again because you're getting the denominator they don't want you to have because the basic thing is to keep locking you up. They get paid for locking you up. They get paid through the prison system, federal government, and the state for locking you up. You're 71% of the people that are locked up. But you're 12% of the population. Look at the numbers. Extraordinary. Look at the ratio. 71%, you have some dealing with the probation department, with law enforcement. You got even schools. All this stuff happens with the black community. Because they're still mad. Because you're not slaves. They're still mad. They're never going to get over this. They're never going to get over this. And we have to understand that. Watch every smile that comes in your face. You can't see their back smiling, but they're back smiling too. But we have to understand economics. The word in economics is C-O-N, con. They are con artists. Always have been, always will be. You have to understand we have to support each other. other through community organizations, through business enterprises, entrepreneurs. We have to do this. Fortunately, we need Black Wall Street all over this country. No one said anything with Italians through their communities, or the Greeks, the Polish, the Jewish communities, all of them, the Irish communities. They got their little businesses. The Chinese communities, they have their little businesses. They got their little, the locks. They call all the, their towns. We have to do the same thing. Nothing wrong with that. That's independence. You have to have that. That's integration. We have to have that. Don't let it be one-sided. Right now, it's one-sided. Everything basically is one-sided. It's 90% one-sided. All they want basically is your money. Your money. They segregated you for many years, and we accommodate them with our money. And we think we're having a good time. But I always said, if I take New York, New York, the Jews own it, the Italians run it, and Black folk just have a good time in it. That's all.
Point well said, Emmanuel. Basically, we have ran out of time, and we just would like to let our audience know that this is Mr. Page of History. We come on by weekly. Our next program will be May the 7th at 1 p.m. We'd like to ask you to put it on your calendar and share with your friends. Come and join us every bi-weekly as we continue to fill in our pages of missing pages of history. And we are to also remind you that please, if you have not purchased your raffle ticket, please do so. If you have not purchased, put in your purchase order for your T-shirt. The time is now. Go to our website and look at all our programs and activities that will show you how you can plug into Missing Pages of History and be a contributor in terms of helping our community to get better. You can do that by responding to Missing Pages of History by going to our website at www.mphinc.org. We thank you. All who would like to make a contribution, please send your contribution to Missing Pages of History, P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. Until next time, let's continue to fill in those missing pages of history.